This poem is by Andrea McPherson. I'm meeting another Canadian on the bus. The bus back from Kilmainham is crowded. Shopping bags teeter on the floor. Women hold small children on their laps. We stand in the slim aisle, swaying with the bus, as if we are boneless and fluid. The girl speaks to us, noticing the accent. She is greedy for voices free of Gaelic, voices that might remind her of the Rockies. The long, flat stretches of the prairies, watery western shores, our voices the colour of new wheat, those hundred shades of gold. Marry a bloody Irishman, she says. I want to go home. In the 2 years she's been here, her voice has shifted. Her language, the lilt of words in her mouth. Immigrants as well, how quickly vowels betray, always fickle. Just talk, she urges us. And I imagine she might close her eyes and be able to see her town, her street, the house she grew up in, as if our words are snapshots. We leave her at Grouston, with her arms outstretched, pointing down the street towards the pub, towards the shores of Newfoundland, her long white arm in a Dublin street. So next I'd like to call up, to say a poem or two, I'm not sure how many, Mr. Patrick Carter.
The girth of this book is indicative of the generosity of the man John Innes. As an anthologist, his inclination and is always going to be as inclusive as he can possibly be. I think about half the people in this room have been in anthology. I'm going to read a poem by Stephanie McKenzie. From Sweet for Winter. The distance between places becomes me. Green Bay, Michigan and Newfoundland. Mountains with a million different names. Yet all truths, songs are songs of fiddles. Perhaps it is the Irish, homes kicked out from under them, but capable of seeing through the horror. Or maybe it is the taut string of wooded instruments, tools plucked from animals not suspecting boredom. They give us similar throats of praise, though we curdle language in our manners ways. Some end the sentence on a lilt, while others fall back to it.
Thank you, Pat. And next up, I'd like to call Leanne Tarlin.
Thank you. I'm actually going to do two poems, if that's okay. I'd like to read another poem by Stephanie McKenzie, which is called The Snow Has Voices. Persistence, the clumps, and vein now in its cheeks. Snow circles the town, and these people like pink-throated vultures. We are hunkered live to wary goings out, and it tossed. Snow hisses like fire under the traction of boots chosen to steer this world. The dirty, car-exhausted are sullen by roads. Jealous of the gentle love of sidewalks, they sneer and nip at times the heels of those bold enough to stride the streets where dirt grips more firm than slippery pathways clear. How their voices drive fear into the mind. They threaten to push me onto the street. Let humps of driving metal chase me down like crocodiles. When it comes in sideways, the closing of schools tight, it wants to stop the body, remind us of lost childhood, of what we want to lose. It carries the past like a torch, flaked like floating ashes. The voices rise like my mother's, her cake ruined, icing too thick, and a heavy price to be paid before church. We wrap our throats, turned wolves and skittish at each corner, prick up our ears to listen to the white. It will not rain or burn away the carbon dead leaves in our brains. The snow flies, arms and legs severed from the body covered ground. Strange larvae. The second poem is by Alice Major, it's called Obey for St. Bridget's Day. Light at the threshold hesitates, its time is neither born nor unborn. Sun still sluggers, rising late, snow heaps like rumpled bedsheets. Into silence a bird whistles, so far, so far. Music teacher cueing an inattentive choir. We are reluctant to rise and chant our shadows, soundless dice cast upon the ground. Bridget, mistress of smithcraft and whistling, prepares the hollow pipe, the hammered plate. Birds breathe in their bones, so immense a readiness, the poised shaft, the point of life, to hurl itself away.
Next I'd like to call Billy Ransom.
Yeah, I know we're in a lot of time pressure tonight, but I'm just going to read 19 poems from Billy. No, I'm only joking, I only want to read 17.
We're
going to
talk for 5 minutes.
No, there's no time pressure tonight, because I'm just going to talk. I'm going to read two. This is the first one, it's called Suburbs by Sue Sinclair. Suburbs. Night holds up a mirror on all sides. There is a depth in things you haven't accounted for. The bungalows return your gaze. Their lost dignity surfaces and they stare at you, trying to import meaning into their small lives. Vinyl-sided, slow-witted, they insist they didn't mean for this to happen. This sameness, shackled to their own kind, like cattle transported slowly nowhere in a broken down truck. This is what happened to them, not what they are. And they know the privilege of even this adequate existence. Ashamed, they lower their heads as children do, who think they have done something wrong in being born. You too bow your head. Wish you could divest yourself of scorn. A woman climbs into a car, will drive until the motor dissolves her troubles. Further up the street, a man lifts a blind, looks around, and wonders what it can all be for. He hopes no one will answer. He is embarrassed to have to ask. This is a poem called Slits, by Tom Daw. Slits are rabbit traps, where people in Canada leave a trap to catch the rabbits, you know? I wrote the poem about visiting his dad when he had Alzheimer's in the hospital. Slits, he always called them, moving away from us in woodsy October sunshine. Rabbits snared coiled and bulging in his pocket. This is years ago. Mother is spreading a picnic blanket. I cry after father, but mother comforts me, explaining he won't be long. Waiting, I toss chocolatey pears into a swift brook, watching them swirl away. He returns in a scent of turf, squash berries and pipe tobacco, sitting on the blanket to tell me things. I learn that rabbits turn white for winter. Their feet are lucky, and the break is 2. Now, many years later, just the two of us in his hospital room on a snowy afternoon. He in his final dementia, a leer of sorts, battling in his own great storm. And I crying inside, wanting to follow him again. A great place for slips, he says, indicating the white walls and the long fluorescent corridor. There's rabbit packs all over the place. Do the doctors catch any? I ask, playing along. And just for a second or two, the old hunter arrogance surfaces, the planter's entrenched resentment of all authority. They wouldn't catch shit, he snarls.
Thanks, Billy. And next time I see a caller, Tom McCarthy.
Born in Spire Carroll, Lego. First of all, I'd like to congratulate John on this book, but on all the others as well. He's done absolutely amazing things, bringing the poets of Newfoundland and the poets of Ireland together. And typical of the man that, since I think the last 2 decades, tried to bring poets together. The poem is called Come by Chance. From Corner Brook I drive the Trans-Canada across Newfoundland on a bare black highway under a blue March sky. I am surprised how little has changed, how well I remember the land rising. The sun falls as I drive through the late afternoon. I chant with the sun's ancient blood rhythm. In an echo overlooking random sounds, I eat fish cakes and later drink a black heart at a tanker inn near Come By Chance. The whole world is at rest, like anything could happen, like nothing's going to happen. Perhaps the world has simply stopped on a Wednesday night in this vast, vacant island where an eternal flame burns in the night sky over a mothballed oil sand. A steady sign that Joey Smallwood had less sense and more dreams than the narcoleptic and Valium. Having nothing else to do, we watched CBC with gull-weary eyes, another documentary on Barbara Ann Scott, still skating with frozen smiles. And Mel tells me the roads are slippery and complains about politicians who won't provide enough salt trucks for the highway. I nod. It's a poem by myself for John Ellen called Molly Keane Considered Fitzgerald. I am sitting here by the sea with a bunch of thyme, quiet as the stranger who held a reed for Harry Lyme. It is as cold as Vienna in October Ardmore. Rosemary in my hand wonders what I'm remembered for. Let's not remember too much of the last war, or the war before, that took so many of the promising and fair. He picked these herbs in the black market of the first frost, rushing about as October did its work in the hilly garden at Lynchland. The last chives, clipped back from bolting, are so like the last lives of boys who came home in khaki. The astrakhan of his collar was neatly reattached by Anne, but is peppered still with an embedded sitting down. Time comforts us both with its godly motion. Time stains champagne with its peach liqueur. This bouquet is a Bellini of sorts. Only the war, and the war, and the war, men must want to fight, come between the Vienna of day, the Portofino of night.
Yeah. And finally, I'd like to call up the mastermind of the introduction himself, Mr. John Harris.
Well, I've always been a sucker for anthologies and began here in Cork a long time ago. I'm presenting a bookshop called Mercier Bookshop for Beach Street. And during the 60s, telling you my time, during the 60s there was a great succession of anthologies from Penguin Books, and J.M. Cohen was the editor. So you had a whole succession of anthologies from Europe, France, from Spain, from Germany, from Italy. You had Latin as well, translated. But not only did it stop at European countries, took in Greece too, took in Arabic poetry, but it didn't stop there. It took in New Zealand, it took in Australia, it took in Russia, it took in China. And for me, this was the revelation. And I remember getting my hands on all of these, and Cohen was like some god there. You know, the man who could bring all this together. And it was remarkable about those anthologies, and one I'd love to read them again, and that he had no time for literary schools. He wanted the poem, in other words, he chose the poems himself, they didn't reflect any literary tradition. He wanted poems that spoke to people directly. In other words, he wanted that kind of bedrock. And I thought that's why they're so memorable. And as this is the fourth in a series of anthologies, and it took a long time for me to get the opportunity maybe to replicate what he was trying to do himself in a much more modest way. But the opportunity did come some years ago with the establishment of links between Ireland and Newfoundland. We had four anthologies. The first one was called the Backyard of Heaven. It was contemporary verse from Ireland, Newfoundland and the Door. And then when we produced that, somebody said to us, if there was Donna Carua McNamara, he should be in there. Let's explain when he died and whatever. You know, he was at his time in the 1770s. But that led us back then to the next anthology, which took in verse from Ireland, Newfoundland, Labrador from the 1770s to the present day. It took in the great canonical Irish text as well as the Irish language. All the poems, all the books of the Irish language, of course. And a strange side effect of that was that there's a group of people in St. John, Newfoundland, who met weekly to improve their Irish. And one that came up to me was the leader and said, thank you for giving us a book with the Irish poems in it. And I never thought in doing it, you know, that would be, you know, but that was, you know. Now, all this time as well, as Billy just been across in Newfoundland and the guests all day there, I was meeting poets from across Canada as well, and I began to discover a huge hinterland of poetry there. It was the Irish dimension, I suppose, that appealed first, because you hear the Irish in the US all the time, but you don't hear the Irish in Canada that much, because the difficulty of traffic, Air Canada rules the skies and similar language rules is years ago. You only have a Ryanair, you know, to get more and more people moving across the Atlantic. But the idea came of a Canadian Irish anthology, which of course was quite preposterous in one sense, that Canada is just so huge, Ireland is just a small entity when you compare the two. But the more we stuck with the idea, the more it refused to go away. Although we've put it aside many times, but eventually we got a dimension to it, because a marvellous series of books came out here from Cork and passed the mastermind behind them in the year 2005, and they were the translations of East European poets. So we put those together with the Irish poets, and suddenly we had something matching Europe and Canada, and that was the genesis for the last anthology, The Echoing Years. And I must thank Pat for allowing us to use those poets in the anthology. I'm also delighted to say that that series has won great praise in Canadian literature, the major journal. of Canadian literature that praised those poems and those poets that were in the Eckman years. So we thought that was that. And one of the last launches we had for the Eckman years was in Vancouver and University of British Columbia. And I happened to walk into this bookshop there on the campus, and had a well-stocked poetry shelf. And suddenly I saw all these names that I'd never heard of before, and they were just super. And I bought as much as my credit card would allow me. I've ever cash it in my pocket. And the idea struck me then, you know, maybe if we, I could do something with this lot, right? But the idea was turned down flatly by this one, left to other editors who had enough, because we put 90 Canadian poets and the last one plus 90 Irish, so it's 700 pages, but it's meant to be the last. But as it turns out, wasn't quite a lot. This one here that followed. And it got some measure of justification by being a student project, because you have to be pragmatic in what you're doing. There were students from the Grenfell College and students from North Ireland and students from Oxford in art that illustrated the poems that are here. So the three-way art student project as well. There's an interesting core dimension to this, in that the man who masterminded it in the Grenfell Faculty of Art was a man called Kent Jones. I don't know if you know the work of Kent Jones, but he's one of the very finest Canadian artists. But he took that great poem, The Madwoman of Cork, by Patrick Galvin, and he formed a whole series of artworks on that poem. And these are in various collections across Canada and in the US, and he allowed us to use one of them in the anthology here as well. This particular book here, it's very much up to date, in that if you look at the table of contents, you'll see 2008, 2007, it's very contemporary. And not only that, but the books from 2009, there's some manuscripts that haven't been published yet, because it was all made much more easier than the ones before, because we would only accept manuscripts in Word. And now, you know, it's so easy to bring things together if you have a mind to do it, because you get it in Word, it's already proofed, so it saves all these layers and layers of proofing that you have to do if you want to bring something like this to perfection. So that made it a bit easier than before, and it enabled us to get 65 authors into the particular volume here. The book starts with this time Vancouver poet Joan Arnott, who's First Nations Committee writer, and ends with David Zirup, who's also from British Columbia. So they booked the loop through Canada and comes back again where it started in British Columbia. Again, if you get the book, I hope you enjoy the poems. Sometimes they get awfully hard putting it together, I just sit back and just pick it up and read them. And if you can get that out of what you're putting together, that's very laborious, well then I think it's a good sign. It also has quite a few First Nations writers. We used to use the word Indian, but the First Nations writing has now come into a great stature. Stephen McKenzie, poems read by Leanne here, and I think Tom, one of the other writers, she has a monumental study of First Nations writing from the 1960s, 1970s. It didn't really figure up to that, and suddenly, out of all the destruction, 100 languages gone, there was this great flowering of First Nations writing, and that has continued to pace until the present day. There are also poems in French in the volume as well. It's there, mix of age, youth, and age. A lot of the poets in here are quite young. So if you get the anthology, I hope you like it, or part of it. And I'd like to read just one particular poem from what's here. It's by a young poet called Elizabeth Phillips. In the context of the book itself, a lot of the poets in this volume are from the prairies or Saskatchewan, mid-Canada. The last two volumes had poets from the big conurbations like Montreal, like Toronto, like Vancouver. Quite a few of those in this volume as well, but I came across an anthology of New Saskatchewan poetry when I was across as well, and I've included 8 or 9 of those poets within this particular volume here. There's a first anthology of Saskatchewan poetry from out in 25 years. I mean, that's the marvelous thing about anthologies, whether they're from wherever they are, you pick up something and then suddenly you say, well, I thought of that, but I never got around to writing it, you know, or saying exactly what I want to say, but never managed to say it. So there's that aspect to it. Elizabeth Phillips says one such poet from mid-Canada, and this short poem is called The Hanging Tree. Yesterday, your hair smelled of green tea, and so like smoke, I followed you from the living room to the bedroom, and would have stayed, but my mother called about the horse. He said she was okay until Dad led him from the barn and across the pasture and past the hanging tree. That's when she turned away from the window. The neighbor was there with his backhoe. She could hear the machine still running. But for some things, you can't prepare. Afterwards, I carried a few books upstairs, whatever I wanted near to hand. John Donne, The Field Guide to Prairie Grasses, and several unread novels. Oh well, it doesn't get any easier, my mother's voice came with me. Back to where you lay, undressed now, and waiting. In the time intervening, I'd almost forgotten you. The horse had an upset tooth, and his ribs were saved. I reached across and touched your hair, nothing like the grass that fueled his life. The pit was wide and deep to keep the coyotes out. Later, you drifted off, your breath burrowing down and into the afterlife of pleasure. While I hung on a little longer to the scented sheet, thinking sleep insufficient, a poor metaphor for what used to be called eternal rest. But I'd get up in the morning, go to my desk, and try again to earn my passage to see all things equally. The fallen horse, his head too much heavier now. My father's grimace as he shakes the neighbor's hand, as he walks around, not over, the square of newly broken earth. And the wind, as it always is, just there, gentled by the big spruce, and sweet, redolent with 20 years, of spilled grain and dung and dust. I'd just like to say how greatly I enjoyed the imaginative gymnastics earlier on in the evening. That was super. You know, so I wish all the young poets well. Just in concluding, I would like to thank Paul and Leanne and Billy and Patrick and Thomas for getting into this anthology. I already thanked Patrick for his help with the previous anthology. There's one particular person I would like to single out who happens to be here this evening. She has the poetic name Raftery. Her name is Kathy Raftery. So Kathy, will you get up and take a bow, please? You're there somewhere at the back. Okay. Jackie works with me down in the Institute in the area of design, and without Jackie this would simply not be between covers because she has worked heroically formatting the entire thing from Word into PDF, working on the design, the layout and all of that. So I'd like to just say a special thanks to Jackie. Jackie's from Mallow. I didn't get up for it. So that brings to an end just the launch here in Cork, and I'd like to be back again. I was here many years ago, I started to talk about, I'd like to thank Tom, you know, for that dedicated moment. I really appreciate that. Okay. There's, I suppose, another connection with Cork as well. You all know Sean Dunn. Sean's brother Aidan gave us the cover. Aidan is a very fine photographer, and he allowed us to use this particular image on the front. So thank you all very much. I've probably forgotten to thank some people, but I hope you know that that you realise how delighted I am that many people, you know, are here. I'm sorry for parachuting in on your weekly work, and I'd like to wish you all the best. Okay, thank you very much.